जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवार धारे यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन यमुना जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवार धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 9, The Supreme Character of Jada Bharata. I'll do a few texts because some of them don't have purports. Text number 5 does not have a purport. 6 has, and then a few other purports, a few other verses. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is text 5. Jada Bharata behaved before his father like a fool, despite his father's adequately instructing him in Vedic knowledge. He behaved in that way so that his father would not know that he was unfit for instruction and would abandon the attempt to instruct him further. He would behave in a completely opposite way. Although instructed to wash his hands after evacuating, he would wash them before. Nonetheless, his father wanted to give him Vedic instructions during the spring and summer. He tried to teach him the Gayatri Mantra along with Omkara and Vyahruti, but after 4 months, his father still was not successful in instructing him. This is how gurus feel. Text number 6. The Brahmana father of Jada Bharata considered his son his heart and soul and therefore he was very much attached to him. He thought it wise to educate his son properly, and being absorbed in his unsuccessful endeavor, he tried to teach his son the rules and regulations of brahmacharya, including the execution of Vedic vows, cleanliness, study of the Vedas, the regulative methods, service to the spiritual master, and the method of offering a fire sacrifice. He tried his best to teach his son in this way, but all his endeavors failed. In his heart, he hoped that his son would be a learned scholar, but all his attempts were unsuccessful. Like everyone, this Brahmana was attached to his home, and he had forgotten that someday he would die. Death, however, was not forgetful. At the proper time, death appeared and took him away. Purport. Those too attached to family life, who forget that death comes in the future to take them away, become attached and unable to finish their duty as human beings. The duty of human life is to solve all the problems of life, but instead people remain attached to family affairs and duties. Although they forget death, death will not forget them. Suddenly they will be kicked off the platform of a peaceful family life. One may forget that he has to die, but death never forgets. Death comes always at the right time. The Brahmana father of Jadabharata wanted to teach his son the process of brahmacharya, but he was unsuccessful due to his son's unwillingness to undergo the process of Vedic advancement. Jadabharata was simply concerned with returning home back to Godhead by executing devotional service through Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. He did not care for the Vedic instructions of his father. When one is fully interested in the service of the Lord, he does not follow all the regulative principles enunciated in the Vedas. Of course, for an ordinary man, the Vedic principles are imperative. No one can avoid them. But when one has attained the perfection of devotional service, it is not very important to follow the Vedic principles. Lord Krishna advised Arjuna to ascend to the platform of Nistraigunya, the transcendental position above the Vedic principles. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattvastho Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Quote, the Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all the dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety. And be established in the Self. Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 45. Text 7, no purport. Thereafter, the Brahmana's younger wife, after entrusting her twin children, the boy and girl, to the elder wife, departed for Patiloka, voluntarily dying with her husband. Text 8. After the father died, the 9 stepbrothers of Jadabharata, who considered Jadabharata dull and brainless, abandoned the father's attempt to give Jadabharata a complete education. The stepbrothers of Jadabharata were learned in the 3 Vedas, the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, and Yajur Veda, which very much encourage fruit of activity. The 9 brothers were not at all spiritually enlightened in devotional service to the Lord. Consequently, they could not understand the highly exalted position of Jadabharata. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahim Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Generally, those who are engaged in family life, they have certain responsibilities. One of the responsibilities is to have sufficient amount of wealth so that the family can feel secure. Without wealth, one feels very anxious, because in the material world, wealth is the way, is the medium with which everything else comes. So it's the responsibility of the, I guess, father. Now there is a saying. This is not a Vedic saying. This is just some saying somebody said. That if you have a very intelligent child, then what is the need for collecting any money? And if you have a very dull child, then what is the need for collecting any money? Because if you have an intelligent child, the child will take care of himself or herself. So expending one's life's energy in amassing wealth for someone who's very intelligent and knows how to take care of themselves is a useless endeavor. And on the other hand, working very hard and amassing wealth for a fool who's going to spend it all away, what's the need for doing that either? The point is that life's energy is not meant for amassing wealth only. Life's energy is meant for cultivating Krishna consciousness. It is Maya's very super trick to tell us, oh, you have other responsibilities which are more important, such as Griha Kshetra Suta Apta Vrittair, taking care of home, children, Suta, Griha Kshetra, one's country, place of residence, Suta Apta, relatives, children and relatives, and Vrittair, one's occupation or assets. Janasya Mohoyam, the bewilderment is into thinking that these are higher priority than Krishna consciousness. Actually, if one is sufficiently Krishna conscious, these things are, one is able to much better manage these things in their right perspective. Not that you have to give them up or neglect them. It's just that one can manage them in the right perspective, with the right priorities. It's like saying, if the house is on fire and a person is thinking, my priority is to figure out, when I'm running out of this house, should I wear a red shirt or a blue shirt? It's not priority at all. It's the wrong priority, to focus on something that has no meaning, or not the right priority. The right priority, the most important priority, is to cultivate one's Krishna consciousness. Now, Jadabharata's father, very nice man, wanted to make sure that his son, you know, 9 very, very educated sons, but this boy was somehow not very intelligent. He was dull. And he seemed to not understand the basic instructions. My dear son, after you evacuate, you should wash your hands. He went and washed his hands and went to the bathroom and evacuated and then cleaned himself. This is the modern way people go to the bathroom. The whole concept of toilet paper and no taking bath after that. And interestingly, they come out and they shake hands with everyone else. And you don't know. Hi, nice to meet you. And when you shake their hands, you have no clue where they've been. But in general, it's all mutual, because one moochy fellow and another moochy fellow shaking hands really doesn't make much big difference. But generally, if you're trying to cultivate Krishna consciousness, then shaking hands is like, whoa, hold on a second there. So at best, what they do is they, that new thing, the thing that kills 99% of the germs, Sanitizer. What sanitizer? No, taking a bath, how can you be sanitized? So Jada Bharata was like that. And his father tried in many, many ways. He tried to teach him. Whatever he taught him, Jada Bharata intentionally did everything the opposite way. And the father, instead of being frustrated, what a dull-headed fellow, let me just give up on him. Instead of doing that, he said, no, I should try again. And he tried again and again. The father was relentless, and interestingly enough, Jada Bharata was also relentless. He would not learn it. Then he thought, okay, maybe if I teach him the principles of brahmacharya, cleanliness, the vows of the brahmachari life, how to chant certain mantras, how to do fire yagya, teach him the omkara mantra, the vyaharti. Vyaharti is when we offer oblations to the bhuvasva, the different zones in the universe. To recognize that the universe is made of different planets or different levels of existence. I mean, Jada Bharata didn't learn that either. Right? He didn't care for all of it. What the father was doing is that he was acting from a platform of bodily attachment, thinking it is my duty to make sure that my son is fairly established in some vocation as a brahmana. If that's what he's not going to do, how will he manage his life? For a brahmana, if they don't know how to perform Vedic sacrifices and they're not studied in Vedic literature, then they don't know how to maintain themselves. The father was worried that although he's born in a brahmana family, he may have to end up doing something shudra-like, getting a job, for example, to maintain himself, and he was worried about that. On the other hand, Jada Bharata was trying to teach his father to become detached, because he's not dull, he's super elevated. And by his adamant behavior, he was helping his father to become detached. So the father was trying to teach the son something, and the son would not learn. The son was trying to teach the father something, the father would not learn. The detachment was that just respect each individual's free will. You try something, after that you just respect it. Oh no, I have to make sure that my son learns brahmanical principles. After all, he's a brahmana. And Jada Bharata is trying to tell him, hey, we are not brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya or shudra, but we are servants of Krishna. And the first order of business is cultivating Krishna consciousness. So the father, he was so busy in trying to help his son that he forgot that death will one day come to him, and that he wouldn't have the time, or he would miss the opportunity of cultivating the most important thing in life, Krishna consciousness. But death doesn't wait for anyone, shows up and takes away his father. And Prabhupada writes, those too attached to family life who forget that death comes in the future to take them away become attached and unable to finish their duty as human beings. So when one is attached, this is an important principle, that when one is attached to whatever conception, different people have different types of attachments, but attachments everyone has. What attachments do is they make us extremely myopic in our outlook. Myopic means short-sighted, that we only consider the immediate circumstance, the immediate situation, and that keeps us so busy that we cannot consider where life is taking us. very, very extremely short-sighted. Versus a spiritualist is considered to be far-sighted. Far-sighted is they can understand the bigger picture of life. So it's very important for us as practicing devotees to not lose the big picture. As they say in English, so caught up in the weeds or the trees that could not see the forest. We get caught up in the minutiae of life, such petty details of life, that we forget. And then we spend so much energy into those petty minutiae, very small, foolish things. Oh, why did they say like that? Why did they do like that? Why is it like this? Why is it too cold? Why is it whatever minutiae, that one forgets the big picture of life. That's attachment. And attachments actually force us to become very, very myopic in our outlook. So unless one becomes detached, one cannot have a bigger picture of life. So some people spend their entire life trying to become detached. And they spend so much time becoming detached that they don't have enough time to consider the bigger picture of life. Too busy with becoming detached. Our method is not that. Our method is to become, to spend life's energy in the big picture of life, and that is to become attached to Krishna. The more we invest our energy in becoming attached to Krishna, a natural outcome is detachment from matter. We were hearing yesterday from Prabhu that detachment is a very insignificant byproduct of attachment to Krishna. So when do we know that we have strong attachments? When we are aware of what those attachments are, and we become aware only because of the light of Krishna consciousness. And we get so caught up in the anartha or the result of wanting to become detached that we don't focus on becoming attached to Krishna. That's why for some persons, anartha nivritti becomes very painful or not joyful. We lose the rasa of Krishna consciousness in it. When we come newly to the temple and meet the devotees, we love the kirtan, we love the dancing, the prasadam is fantastic, association is all very nice. A few months, few days, few years, and then the same association becomes painful. Or it's the same program every day, why not something different? Or the same prasadam, why not something different? Something. Or things start becoming too painful, too mechanical. Because our attention is not on the bigger picture. Our focus is so much on the anartha itself. That our attention is, oh, look at the anartha that I have. And it's not one or two, it's many. And each anartha is so deep-rooted. And we become very busy trying to extricate ourselves from those anarthas. But that's not our process. Our process is to become attached to Krishna. Even when we know that there are anarthas, even when we know that there are things that are these heavy anchors, still, whatever energy we have, we expend it to becoming attached to Krishna. It's not that we are completely unaware of our anarthas. That's not the point. But the way to look at our anarthas is from the perspective of how will that anartha hold me back from becoming attached to Krishna. That's the perspective to look at them. And because we want to become attached to Krishna, we're ready to give things up. But if there's nothing on the other side, people are not sure why their attachment should go away. So this is the difference between the father of Jadabharata and Jadabharata. Jadabharata didn't care. He didn't want to do anything that will add a dead weight to his fast progressing Krishna consciousness. These material duties. Now Prabhupada says that material duties are imperative. When I say material duties, it means Vedic instructions, how to perform our duties within this world. They're imperative for everyone to follow. We cannot reject them immaturely. One who rejects their material duties without sufficient purification will face a lot of trouble in their life. The way to give up material duties is to become sufficiently mature in one's spiritual understanding. Then it's not about giving up, but it is about engaging without attachment. So that's what's important. In the immature state, we only think about either one is too attached to those material duties or completely averse to them. Either of which is not nice. Either of which is still within the purview of the material modes of nature. But as one is spiritually advanced and reaches a high state of Krishna consciousness, then one is not obliged to perform these duties. So that is the instruction Krishna gives Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. That you may be performing, or one may be performing their duties according to Vedic instructions. Yet, the Vedas primarily deal with topics that are within the modes of nature. The mode of passion, mode of ignorance, and the highest is the mode of goodness. And these three brothers, these nine brothers of Jadabharata, they were very learned in the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Vedas. And Prabhupada is saying that these three Vedas deal with how to perform your fruitive activities very nicely. How to propitiate and satisfy the demigods properly. How to perform one's material duties with honesty and integrity and respect for another person, etc. But that's material. How to perform charity, how to perform yajna, how to perform austerities, how to perform anything. How to do it properly in a legal, I guess, way. In a way by which there is gradual elevation to a higher consciousness. That's what the Vedas deal with. And so it's important to follow the Vedas. And once when one transcends the Vedic knowledge, that transcending the Vedic knowledge means understanding that I am a servant of Krishna. And life's number one priority is to serve Krishna. This is realization, not just understanding. Then one is not bound by the lower duties. One should operate on a transcendental platform. This is Krishna's instruction to Arjuna. Nistraigunya bhava Arjuna. And he says, Nirdvandva nitya sattvastho. One of the ways to recognize that a person is beyond the modes of nature is that they are not disturbed by the dualities of life. There's always duality. There is pleasure, there is pain. There is victory, there is failure. There is gain, there is loss. There is happiness, there is distress. There is respect, there is disrespect. Mana, abhimana. When one can transcend those situations, and in all circumstances of life, it's not just one day of the week, I transcended some difficulty. That becomes the nature of a person. That's an indication that one is situated on a higher platform than the mode of, or than the three modes of nature. That's just neutral state. And it's very important. He says, Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. This phrase, Yoga Kshema, appears in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna assures the devotee that don't worry about things that you don't have, and don't worry about preserving what you have. I take care of it personally. I carry things that you need for you. Vahami aham. Otherwise, in life, one is always worried about, I don't have this, how can I get this thing? Or, I have something, how do I make sure that I preserve it? And one is busy with Yoga Kshema program. Krishna says, Vahami aham, I personally carry all things that you lack and preserve what you already have. So when Krishna is engaged in that way, we don't have to be worried. Niryoga Kshema. One is free of this worry of, how am I going to get this? How am I going to manage that? Or what if, you know, this particular asset is going to go away? Who's going to take care of me? One of the concerns we may have is, oh, I'm joining the temple. Who's going to take care of me in my later years of life? Who's been taking care of us so far? The same person will take care of us even later. The problem is, we think, I've been taking care of myself so far. I've had a job, I've had some money, you know, my body is strong, I'm able to do things for myself. I'm taking care of myself. But later, who's going to take care of me? This is the fallacy of such thinking. Krishna has been taking care of us. Krishna has been taking care of every living entity. Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bahunam yo vidadhati kaman. So when Krishna is taking care of everyone, Krishna is taking care of us, which he has been doing, he will also take care of us in the future. The question is, are we willing to be in that Krishna's caring program or not? That is called Niryoga Kshema. That we sign up for Krishna, you take care of us program versus I'll take care of myself program. And I'll take care of myself, that consciousness puts us right into the in the mix of duality. Because when I have to take care of myself, I have to figure out what is gain, what is loss, what is victory, what is defeat, what is happiness, what is distress. I place myself in the field of duality. And in the field of duality, all I get is a very, very healthy mixture of distress and distress. There is no happiness in the materialist. It's a good mixture of distress and distress. It depends on which distress you like. In the material realm, happiness only means the absence of distress. It's not really happiness. The absence of distress feels like, this is so good. It's like if someone's banging our head to the wall about 20 times and they just stop for about 30 seconds. Ah, this is so good. Bam! Before we know, head goes to the wall again. Or if someone is drowning, right, their head's being dunked into the water. Let them breathe for a few seconds. Oh, that is so nice. You know, at that time, in those few moments, the breath of air that we take, we enjoy that breath so much, right? Because it's not available until then and before our head is dunked back in water. But otherwise, we're just breathing normally every day and we don't notice that breathing is so easy and pleasurable. Therefore, you ask a person in the material world, especially, how are things? Well, no problem. That is their happiness, the absence of problems. One Prabhu defined happiness as the time gap between two problems. One problem has just gone. Before the next problem comes, how are you? I have no problems. I'm happy. This is not happiness. So when we sign up for I will take care of myself program, we are in the field of duality. And in that field of duality, what happens? We become attached to our conceptions of happiness. We become attached to the conceptions of respect, honor. We become attached to the conceptions of victory, gain, etc. And we want to minimize the other side. And that brings us right back into this myopic lifestyle. I recently heard Srila Radhanath Maharaj explain something very, very nicely. It's called Lessons from a Hawk, I think. So he narrates that during his early years when he was in the Himalayas, he was sitting by the shore of a pond or lake. And as he looked up in the sky, there was this big hawk that was flying high up in the sky, gliding. And as it was gliding, it was slowly zeroing in. It was coming down in circles, spiraling down. And he says, came all the way so much that he could see the yellow eyes of the hawk. And those eyes were very focused. They were looking for something. And what those eyes were focused on were fish right below the surface of the lake. And zoom, the hawk came down and grabbed a fish in its claws and flew out. They went into the water, there was some skirmish, and flew out with a big fish in its hands, its claws. And the fish was beating, just trying to get out of the grapple of the hawk, but the hawk wouldn't let go. And in a few seconds, that was it. That was the end for the fish. So he describes that the lessons from that was just a few moments before the hawk zeroed in into the pond, that fish was happily swimming with its family. They went shopping. They were eating fancy food. They were talking nice things with each other, telling his wife, I love you, whatever he was saying. Looking at his children. Of course, Maharaj didn't say that, I'm embellishing it. But just a few moments before that. And unbeknownst, like a super surprise, hawk, as the representative of death, came and grabbed that fish from its very, very happy situation with his family and everyday things that he was doing, you know, shopping, whatever. Just the happy life just abruptly ended because of the cruel claws of death. So we don't know. We don't know when it is going to happen to us, any moment. So that was one lesson. And the second lesson was that because this fish was swimming near the surface of the water, not really, he was on the shallow side, he's always vulnerable to death. But there are other fish who swim deep down, and the hawk cannot get there. So he was describing that when we perform our sadhana bhakti in a very shallow manner, we're swimming happily, but we're in the shallow waters. Then we are very vulnerable. Just some mechanical, lackluster, Jai Jagannath Prabhu calls it the Nish Nish Nam Nam chanting. Chandramouli Maharaj has a beautiful story for it. When we perform lackluster, mechanical, shallow bhakti, then we are always vulnerable. We are near the surface. It's imperative to go deep into our practices. Because in the deep waters, it's safer. One might say, oh, there are sharks there. But in this example, deeper is safer. One is not so vulnerable. One is well situated. Because death can come at any time. And that was the lesson here, that the father was so attached to his son, just to make sure his son has some occupational engagement, that he forgot his main duties, that he had to cultivate his own Krishna consciousness. In the 7th canto, there is a nice analogy that describes that one may be very strong physically, or one may have a lot of assets, good education, a strong body, or coming from a good lineage, or beauty, bodily beauty, abilities. One may have all of that. And it compares that, all of that, to an elephant. It says that an elephant, if he has to cross a river, but the river has a very strong current, then the current can wash the elephant downstream, because the current is very strong. So even if it's an elephant who's such a huge body, heavy fellow, I mean, you don't see skinny elephants. Like, even the skinny elephant is really big. What to speak of a healthy fellow? Even an elephant can get washed downstream. But in the same river, a very tiny fish, very small fish, is not taken away by the current. He happily swims. So what's the difference that such a small body is not washed down, but such a big fellow can get washed away? The difference is that the fish has taken shelter of the river, whereas the elephant is relying on his strength. This is the principle. That when we are very tiny, when we compare ourselves to Maya, very small, like insignificant. This is why Maya separates us, isolates us, because that's the only way she can get us. Because when we isolate ourselves from the association, or isolate not just physically, but consciousness-wise, when we isolate ourselves from the Vaishnava association, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, then our insignificance becomes prominent. And we become easy targets for Maya. But when we remain connected, we take shelter of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra very nicely, then although we are insignificant, we have taken shelter of something stronger. And so Maya cannot really get us. Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Maya is not some very drastic thing, you know, one has to go murder someone, or, you know, play the slots all night, or, you know, have unrestricted sexual interactions. That is of course Maya, but that's, it doesn't have to be so drastic. It can even attack one in a very subtle way. The subtle way would be pride, or envy, or thinking I'm advanced now, or I know something, I don't need to serve anyone, why are they not serving me? These are the subtler things. This is where we actually fall. We may not fall to the big ones, but we fall to the subtle ones. So it's an important saying that in the beginning, Maya attacks us with very gross kind of allurements. And as one is becoming more established in Krishna consciousness, then the next set of weapons is she attacks us with subtle allurements. And these subtle allurements are really the painful ones. Pride, envy, those things. And it's these subtle ones that take a person away very quickly. And they grow very fast. So the big picture of life is to cultivate Krishna consciousness in a very deep, strong manner. So those are some thoughts. Any comments, questions? Edward? Let's see if Madhavendra Puri Prabhu has something.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
I wanted to ask, earlier in your class you were talking about how our process is not one of trying to remove our anarthas, rather it's trying to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna. Mm-hmm. So, at least for me, I know that when I recognize these anarthas, it's very tempting to think, oh, I have to work on that, I have to work on that. So, what advice can you give about taking that tendency of, I have to work on that, and rather refocusing it to how to use this as an opportunity to deepen our relationship with Krishna?
Well, we have to work on our anarthas in the sense that we are aware that these are stumbling blocks in our cultivation of our relationship with Krishna. We are aware of them. That's what they help us for. Oh, I'm aware. But if my attention is on the anartha only, then we lose focus as to why this is necessary. So our wherever we have strength, there is something in our Krishna consciousness where we feel that there is strength. While there are areas of weakness, there are some areas of strength. Then we double that, or we energize those areas of strength, because that's where we feel the connection with Krishna. And as that is being done, the way to go beyond the anarthas is not, I have to get rid of this anartha, I have to get rid of this anartha. Then we become so anartha conscious. Right? And we've heard this many times, that we are not the International Society for Anartha Consciousness. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So rather than rely on our own strength to overcome the anartha, we call out for Lord Nityananda or Gornitai, or, you know, the spiritual master, however we call out for the higher mercy to help us. That is something we often forget, or it sort of fades into the background, that we are only dependent on mercy. And it's only that mercy that can take us to the next stage. Not our endeavor, that I have to get rid of this anartha, then I'll be nishta. So that seeking what's called descending mercy is our prime focus. Jitendra Prabhu and then Acharya Nishtha Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, when dealing with Aviduttas, like Jetabhart, you know, and I mean, to say if he was to move into the temple here, you know, and everybody had their own little idiosyncrasies, and his father was, you know, it says one should not bring a person into the material world unless he cannot bring him out. So his father's trying to teach him some, you know, conventional ways of behavior and stuff. So if we had a room full of these type of people with all these different, you know, behavior things, I mean, how
we don't have already?
How would we function as a temple, you know?
At least Jadabharata didn't want to live in an establishment like that.
But we're here, we're concerned with other people, so, you know, we have to, you know, there's a certain protocol, you know.
So first of all, we're missing a big chunk of life stages in between. The people, ourselves and the people we're dealing with, are at this extreme. where we look like Jada Bharata, we behave like Jada Bharata.
The abyss.
You tell them, Prabhu, take a bath after evacuating, they take a bath first. However, we all are like, we're here on this extreme. Jada Bharata, you know, they're all on that extreme. So in between is the whole process of Krishna consciousness. So we can't say that that Jada Bharata will come live like this. It won't be possible. So whatever we see in the material world is a manifestation of the three modes of nature. Usually one mode of nature, not even three. Three would be a lot. If you see three, at least there is some hope. But it's mostly one, at best two. Prabhupada dealt with one mode of nature primarily, people in that one mode. So this is a night and day difference. Such persons need training. That's what Prabhupada says. Vedic instructions are imperative for everyone, except those who are fully self-realized. Atma Ramascha Muneha. Once you're on the Atma Rama platform, then you're not bound by grantha, nirgrantha. Nirgranthi means not tied down or not bound by scriptural injunctions.
We had one fellow here that he wouldn't do any service, but he just chanted all day in the temple room. And that created, you know, kind of mixed feelings amongst the devotees. But that just came to mind, you know.
I've been reading Harishori Prabhu's diary. And there's one devotee who wanted to chant 100 rounds sitting on a tree. He came and asked Prabhupada, please give me permission to do so. And if I have the sequence of events right, Prabhupada didn't say yes wholeheartedly, but he didn't say no either. And then a few days later, he came and complained that all the devotees are disturbing me. I want to go sit by the Ganges and chant Hare Krishna whole day. Prabhupada said, he didn't say no, he didn't say yes, I think. And then other devotees asked, and Prabhupada said, what's the use of it? He has no conception of serving the Vaishnavas. And then he described that we are not ready for nirjana bhajan, chanting in isolation. We're not ready for it. So it should not be something that's the nature of our existence. Chanting is nice. Chanting more is even better. But not interacting with others, not associating with others, that's dangerous. At least at our stage of Krishna consciousness. In fact, even at later stages of Krishna consciousness, one doesn't give up. Lord Chaitanya never gave up association of his associates.
Prabhupada appreciated service. I remember, he says, if you're doing service, you can stand on my head. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear that? So,
I wouldn't say Prabhupada only appreciated service. I wouldn't say Prabhupada only appreciated one facet of Krishna consciousness. Like, he didn't say only something and not another thing. He never said like that.
Well, we've become well-rounded.
Not even well-rounded. Prabhupada appreciated the expression of bhakti according to the program that he gave us. So if some person was only serving and did not chant their rounds, I don't think he would be pleased by that. So he wanted to see that we all attend the morning program, we chant our rounds, we engage in service, we attend the evening program. That is pleasing. But when we mix things, during morning program we have something else going on, then when during service time we chant our rounds, that mixture is no fun.
One other thing is, it says, I think I read a verse, a Vaishnav doesn't always expect the ordinary chain of events. So, you know, throughout our day, so many things can come our way. And then we might become disrupted in our, you know, our regular day-to-day activities.
The crowning jewel-like quality for a devotee, for a brahmana, of course devotee, for a brahmana, is that he never is surprised by anything. Anything that happens, he's never surprised by it. Always. Because that's the nature of goodness. You're never surprised. Meaning, you always expect something to go wrong. But okay. And because you're prepared, when things go wrong, the brahmana's response is always perfect. The person in the mode of passion gets completely disturbed by that because he's not expecting that. He's not prepared. And the mode of ignorance, fellow, regardless of what the situation is, he just wants to go to sleep. That's the best response to any situation. Let me just go to sleep. It's too much to handle. So this is a brahmana, always prepared, never surprised. Never, never surprised. Ah, I never knew. Never surprised. Acharyanista, Prabhu?
Thank you, Prabhu. I was wondering, you were speaking in the beginning of the class about attachment to Krishna.
Uh-huh.
And also in response to Ed's question about receiving the mercy. What is the role of attachment to sadhu in attachment to Krishna?
The same. Attachment to sadhu means attachment to Krishna. There's nothing different in that. In fact, our attachment to Krishna is established by attachment to sadhu. In fact, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could go a little in depth.
Well, Lord Kapila makes it like an injunction that one must be attached to a sadhu. That is the only way of becoming detached from the material conceptions of life. And that comes again and again in the Bhagavatam. In the fifth canto, when Jadabharat finally speaks to Maharaj Rahugana, the most important instruction he gives the king is the way to come out of material conceptions is to bathe oneself in the dust of a great person. He uses the phrase, Mahiyasam Padarajo Vishekam. And that phrase repeats again in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. When he tells Narasimhadev, there's this, it's a triplet of verses, very beautiful. He makes a case that Matirna Krishna Parata Svatova, one cannot remember Krishna on his own or by someone else's telling him or by holding a conference about it. Someone else means someone who's not established in Krishna consciousness. So a charlatan or a professional Bhagavatam speaker or someone might casually say, remember, it won't work like that. One cannot remember Krishna because he's too busy. Adanta gobir vishatam tamishram punapuna charvita charvanana. He's so busy chewing the chew, the same stupid program again and again, that he just doesn't have. And the next verse he says that they're all fallen into a dark well and they're being yanked by material nature as if tied by a rope around their waist. The third verse he said the only way to get out of it is to get the mercy of a pure devotee. Bathe oneself in the dust of a pure devotee. In this canto, Rishabhdev said the same thing. Dwar Mahor Vimukthes. And he says, this door, this way, is when you associate with worldly persons. This way is when you associate with the pure devotees. Later in the fifth canto, it's coming up again. There's a nice prayer that the residents of Jambudvip are praying to Lord Narasimhadev. And they say, Magaradara Vitta Bandhushu Sango Yadisyat Bhagavat Priyeshunaha. He says, we don't want to be attached to wife, home, hearth, children, society, family, love. We don't want to be attached to that. If there has to be any attachment, Let that attachment be to Bhagavat Sangha, to the devotee. That is the only way to become situated in the self. Otherwise, there is no hope. So we should be unabashedly, shamelessly attached to the Vaishnavas. Shamelessly. Even if there are material conceptions, fine, but shamelessly attached. Well, that's a starting point. That's very healthy, very good. We are anyway attached. Better to be attached to a sadhu. Prasad, last question, Glenn.
Signing for Krishna to take care. We often mix
signing up for let Krishna take care of me program.
Yeah, no, forever. Suppose we're taking either we can take care of our own self, and the second option is Krishna take care of ourselves.
Yeah, the first one is not even an option.
Yeah,
we think it is, but it's not.
So if we sign for that process, Krishna take care of ourselves, there is a big problem that we mix duality in that process.
So we are only telling Krishna, take care of me, when I'm taking care of myself. That's what's happening. You know what is a figurehead? Figurehead person? Only for namesake. We say Krishna is God only for namesake. Ultimately, I'm the controller anyway. That's the program. Krishna becomes the figurehead controller, figurehead caretaker. Because it's just nice to say it. But the real control is in our hands. Like the president of India is a figurehead leader. He's a useless fellow. The whole power rests with the prime minister. You understand? But he's just a figurehead. Lives in a big house, gives a few speeches, and that's about it. But the power is in someone else's hand. So we may say, Krishna, I signed up for you take care of me program, but deep down, I'm still controlling everything. It's not so easy to give the reins in Krishna's hands. That verse that Arjuna says to Krishna, Prichhamitam dharma mavimudha chetas yashreyasyan nishchitam bruhitanme shishyasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. That's the Krishna, you take care of me program. There are elements in that verse that one, when we practice, then we allow Krishna to be the chariot driver. That he takes control of it. You want to know what those elements are? Yeah, okay. Let me, quick 30 seconds and we'll elaborate one-on-one later. Without proper conceptions of who we are and what we have as assets, or what we think we have as assets, intelligence, strength, abilities, these are all cheating. They're illusion. The real thing is, Krishna is Suhrada. Krishna will never, 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 never let us down. If we don't experience Krishna's mercy, then the first place to look at is we have let Krishna down. That's why we're not experiencing mercy in our lives. It's not Krishna's a miser holding back anything. So whenever in our Krishna consciousness we're not feeling mercy, the first place to correct is our connection. Krishna's always there. So our conceptions make us fall into controlling situation. Dualities come, and first thing is, how do I take care of this? Without considering, Krishna, how would you like me to take care of this? We don't give Krishna the enough opportunity to help us. So for that, Krishna says, Dadami buddhi yogam tam. But there's a condition to it. The one is connected to Krishna. Right? The parallel Prabhupada would say is the radio. The radio station was constantly broadcasting. Our receiver is not tuned in to that station, so we don't hear it. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to tune our receiver to the Krishna channel. And for that we have to perform sadhana bhakti. That's our tuning. But what happens is, oftentimes, while we're tuning the radio channel nicely, we're also tuning something else on the side, just in case. Just in case, who knows? Have you seen Krishna? No. Then how you know Krishna will take? So just in case, something. Krishna can come for Draupadi. After all, she's Arjuna's wife. I'm nobody. Like that. People fall into that trap. Or however, there are different versions of it. But the thing is, our receiver is not tuned in to Krishna's mercy. The mercy comes through the Guru Parampara, through Bhagavatam. Like that. Also, we are tuned in. When we tune into the messages of the Bhagavatam, we tune into the words of the sadhus, we tune into the mercy that we want to get from whatever service we are doing, then we experience Krishna's presence in our lives. Otherwise, it's the shallow, you know, like the fish floating on the, or swimming on the shallow side. Just things happen mechanically, from one thing to another thing. Okay? I have to stop so that I maintain my own. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Today is Maha cleanup. So those who are brahmanas, we're going to clean up the altar. But those who cannot go on the altar, we need your help to clean up the temple room, Prabhupada's simhasan, all the places. So we're going to start at 9, right? 9 o'clock. If someone would like to, can they start earlier? Okay, we need volunteers, Prabhus, those who can't go up at least to clean up Srila Prabhupada's simhasan and put the temple room. We go all the way up and clean the crevices. So we will not do tribute. Oh, we should do, because there's... Okay, we'll meet for Ishtagosti quickly, 20 minutes, and then we'll start cleanup. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.